Welcome to Season 8, Episode 40 of the Ubuntu Podcast. In this episode, we have some interviews from OggCamp, and we've also got a command line love, and we'll go over your feedback. I'm Martin, and joining me this week are Alan.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. And Mark.
Hello.
And joining us again from Australia, Nick.
Hello.
Hello, Nick. Thank you very much for coming back again. That's more like it. I was going to say, we didn't recruit an Australian to come on here and say hello.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope you're drinking Foster's.
I've got Victoria Bitter on my table, but it's pretty early in the morning, so I'm on the coffee, to be honest.
Half 7 in the morning.
Come on. Yes. It's nearly 8:30 now. It's okay.
Although some people do consider Foster's to be breakfast beer, yes.
We don't. No one even drinks it here. It's a tourist thing.
Yeah, I think that's like saying to an English person, no, so you drink Bass? And it's like, no, nobody drinks Bass.
No, because I'm not from the 1970s, that's why.
I actually had Foster's when I was in the UK last year, and it's actually brewed differently. It's not actually Foster's. They just use the brand name Foster's. It's actually Carlton Draft.
Outrage.
Right. Yeah. So, Alan, what have you been up to since last we spoke?
I've been automating myself out of a job again. People who are developing apps for Ubuntu Phone and they don't have a phone, they develop on the desktop and then they send me their apps and say, hey, can you test this on your phone? And I got a bit sick of that. So, much as I'm willing to help people, it's very time consuming for me to do that. So I've set up a bot where you go to a web page, upload your Click package and put in your email address and the Click package gets sent to a phone. It runs the application, takes a bunch of screenshots, grabs all the log files, and then emails them to you. And I wrote that with Stuart Langridge over the weekend, and it was jolly good fun.
Cool. That does sound very useful. So, Nick, what have you been up to recently?
Well, not too much as of the last week, but I did have a situation where I needed to redo my computer, as it were, installed the latest version of Mate, of course, and got that mention in early.
Thank you.
And and Ubuntu Studio. Checks in the post, very good. And an Ubuntu Studio thing. But here we go. I'd like to warn everyone with DD. Obviously, I cleared some hard drives, had my backup drive nice and ready sitting on the side to copy data over. Went to make a bootable USB and accidentally DD'd over the backup hard drive.
Ouch. Ouch. Oh, dear.
Yeah. So I did try to do a photo rec to get some stuff back, but you know what? Sometimes it's easier just to lose the data and start again than filter through a whole bunch of nameless files saved from a recovery program.
Yeah, wow. My first attempt to install Linux involved deleting the partition table on my parents' computer.
It's amazingly how quickly you can become an expert in something when you trash your parents' computer. Yeah, this is how I got into computers.
I now know how to never do that again.
Exactly. So what have you been up to, Mark?
I've been doing a bit of gardening. We've had some fairly substantial wins in the UK over the past few weeks.
Not virtual gardening simulator or some other Steam game with your Steam controller.
Not making a robot that does the gardening for you.
Actually walking outside
actual
of my house
interaction with organic matter,
pruning some dead bits off plants and putting my greenhouse back together and screwing it to the wall so the wind can't blow it around.
When I replace all of my lawn with AstroTurf, I know who to recruit to come and help then.
Actually, my girlfriend's grandparents did that.
Speaking of grandparents, my wife's grandfather has just retired, so I'm hoping that I can outsource all my gardening stuff to him because he's not going to be very busy at the moment. Maybe. What about you, Martin? What have you been up to?
Well, I was inspired by a talk that Stuart Langridge gave at OggCamp, where he explained how Bad Voltage automate the publishing of their podcast. So once they've got the audio mastered by Jono, it then uploads the audio and the show notes to different places and does all of the format conversions and stuff like that. And he explained this was extremely useful, but largely coded for their purposes. So I looked at his code and I've started to make a more generic solution to that. So we published the last show using that script, and it still needs a little bit of work, but I'll have a link to Stuart's a YouTube video of Stuart's talk at OggCamp this year, and also the source code for what I've called Pod Publish. And if anyone wants to dive in and help improve that, they're more than welcome.
Awesome. So that publishes podcasts to typical places like WordPress and PodPress and YouTube and all that
kind of
stuff.
It does, right? Yes. So there's a number of... So WordPress, YouTube and SFTP for uploading at the moment. So it'll probably need a traditional FTP handler for things like Libsyn, for example. And then we need to think about how we handle the different WordPress plugins. Some people use PowerPress, some people use PodPress, and there are others. And I haven't... done any of that bit yet, because that needs some thought, but it does, you know, publishing show notes to YouTube and linking all of this up, and it does all of the audio encoding as well, so the MP3 and awesome. OGG and MKV encoding.
Well, System AU will definitely take a look at that in the new year. Save us a lot of time, hopefully.
That's the plan. Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah, it'd be good to get some contributions from other podcasters who do things differently.
Yes,
as well.
Yes.
Make it a super flexible, comprehensive tool. Awesome, good work. Right, let's get on.
As you'll know, a few weeks ago, we were at OggCamp in Liverpool. While we were there, I recorded a few interviews with people who were exhibiting. And, well, we're going to play them for you now. So first up, here we have an interview with Entroware.
I'm at OggCamp talking to Anthony Pitch from Entroware. Hi, Anthony. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going great. I'm having a great OggCamp, so...
Excellent. That's good to hear. So we've spoken a bit about Entroware before on the show. We reviewed some of your machines a few months ago now. So just tell us a bit about who Entroware are and what you're doing at OggCamp.
Sure. Well, we're a Linux computer manufacturer, and we're basically here to fill the gap in the market of Linux support on hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And we're here at OggCamp basically to get our name out there.
Cool. And you're one of the sponsors as well, is that right?
Yeah, I'm the platinum sponsor. Got stage named after us, which is
excellent.
Awesome.
Yeah, I did a talk on the Entroware stage earlier. Yeah. So you're based in Liverpool, is that right?
Yeah, we are. Yeah,
excellent.
Based in Liverpool, which is convenient.
Yeah. So I don't think there are any other UK-based companies who do pre-installed Linux hardware. Is that right?
As far as we're aware, not to the degree that we are. No.
Right. So you've got a few devices with you today, including the Aura and the Proteus, which I reviewed on the show before.
Yep.
You've also got a sort of ultrabook style device. What's that one?
Yeah, well, the Apollo we've had since January, and it's just had a nice upgrade.
Yeah,
it's now shipping with Skylake chips.
Okay,
and
so that's the new Intel architecture.
Yeah, it's the sixth generation.
Right,
yeah. And that basically means that there's more battery life, which is absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
It's really cool and quiet.
Uh-huh.
And it's got a nice backlit keyboard as well. So
cool. And we sell these running Ubuntu, is that right?
Yeah, Ubuntu and Ubuntu Mate.
Right, okay. Yeah,
1510.
Cool. And is that on all of your devices?
Yeah, we offer that on all of them. Yeah.
Cool. And what's it been like making sure all of your hardware is supported? How does that process work?
Basically, it's trial of fire, basically. So say 1510 comes about, we just install it, see what the issues are there any graphics issues, are there any issues with the trackpad, for example, and we just might have to tweak a few configs to get things working, especially with things like what's it called? Optimus.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there is a big process to that.
If there are problems, do you do the fixes in-house, or do you go out to the community and ask them to help you?
We do most of the fixes in-house, because it's literally a case of tweaking the configuration file.
Right, okay.
Or if it's something more major, like bringing gestures to the touchpad, then we'll liaise with the likes of Martin Wimpress from the Ubuntu Mate project.
Yeah.
And he'll help us package something up.
Cool.
Yeah.
You've got another device with you, which is a prototype of a Steam machine. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
So is this an official one?
Yeah, we've got Valve partnership and everything. signed all the relevant forms. This is very much a prototype today. It's not really production ready, but by the time we get the green light for it, probably end of November, it will be production ready. So
okay.
This is a massive tease for it.
Right. So what kind of hardware are we talking about for that?
It's desktop hardware. The ones we have today, the Skylake i3. It's got a GTX 750 in it and a 8GB of DDR4, which is always
and
nice.
What sort of form factor is it? Is it designed to sit under a desk or under a telly or behind a couch?
It's probably best behind the couch or next to your television or something like that. It's small form factor. It's a mini ITX case.
Right.
Specifically costs $250. It's basically all about the form factor because it is aimed at gaming in the living room.
And what sort of are there particular criteria which you've got to fulfill for it to be an official Valve Steam machine?
Basically the only requirements are that you ship with SteamOS and a Steam controller.
Right.
So
all the hardware and the form factor is up to you.
There's a lot of room for decisions from our part there, which is great.
And will that mean that you then have SteamOS as an option on your other devices as well, or is this going to be exclusive to Steam machines?
We're keeping it exclusive to the Steam machines because, having SteamOS on a laptop, we think, wouldn't really fit the use case.
Yeah.
Then it also makes support much easier if we have one unit.
Yeah.
Cool.
Great. Well, I hope you enjoy the rest of Old Camp. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Cheers.
My chat with Entroware. I found it really interesting, actually, that the only criteria for the Steam machine is that it has to have SteamOS and a Steam controller, and it's everything else is you've got complete free reign.
So there's no validation process for it. It's not like it has to be certified as a Steam machine, or did he not go into detail about that kind of paperwork?
Well, when he was saying about signing the relevant paperwork, I assume there is some sort of certification process there to make sure that they are meeting those criteria. They're just not particularly wide. They don't reach into what they're allowed to do very much. It's just quite a superficial. They have to have SteamOS and they have to have a Steam controller.
Right. So if someone wanted to manufacture super tiny, lean type of device that has isn't there a requirement for it to have a certain amount of disk space?
I think SteamOS requires a certain amount of disk space, so therefore yes, the knock-on effect would be that the device would have to have a certain amount.
You could potentially do something quite small with a mini ITX size, and just do in and market that as an in-home streaming kind of device. You'd be competing with Steam Link, unfortunately, but there's certainly options for you to create a Steam machine that's not double Nvidia cards in SLI and all that top end machine.
Yeah, I would be surprised if anyone could compete with the Steam Link on price, though, if someone was going to go down that like a company.
Right, but the Steam Link has a requirement that there is another machine on the network. You can't use the Steam Link on its own. So if you could make a machine that was, low enough to be able to play casual games, for the higher end stuff, it farms that out to another machine on your network, which chances are, if you've got a Steam account, you probably already have.
Certainly, yeah.
Interesting. It'd be interesting to see what kind of sales they get for the Steam machines, because there's lots of factors going on there. It's a retail Linux gaming machine, which there aren't many of on the planet, anywhere.
Yeah.
So it's already quite a niche. And they're a small player, in a giant market.
My concern is with the Steam machine, as far as sales go, is the fact that the kinds of people who are willing to use a Steam machine and either stream from it or set one up themselves are the kinds of people who really just want to set up a computer themselves as opposed to purchase one outright. They'll probably look at the price and go, I could cobble that together myself a lot easier and for a lot less money. And not dissing Entroware at all. I've seen their website and checked their products online. They're great, great service. But I just wonder.
So do you think it's more likely a young kid who puts a Steam machine on their wish list or something, their Christmas list or something, a parent goes and buys it for them rather than them going and you know, buying it. I don't know. I'm finding it difficult to find where Steam machines fit.
Maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe someone like me who would want a Steam box in the front room and hasn't got the time and to actually put together a thing from parts themselves and just wants to go somewhere and run a Linux games console and knows that you can go somewhere to just buy one that's ready to go.
Right. Yeah. And I'm similar. I will not build a computer. I've been there and done that. I'm over the age of 40 and I do not want to spend my life plugging stupid cables in confined spaces inside computers and cutting my hands to ribbons. I've done that. Thanks very much. I'd rather someone else did that, cleaned all the blood off and sold it to you.
Right. Shall we listen to the Ragworm interview?
Does it involve blood?
I don't think so.
Okay, let's do it.
I'm Ogcam talking to Stacey Driver from Ragworm. Hi, Stacey.
Hi, Mark.
So, tell us about Ragworm. What do you do?
So, Ragworm is a prototyping printed circuit board manufacturer. We specifically started the service to interact better with hobbyists, startups, and those people who needed prototypes in order to develop their products further. We wanted to make it accessible for everybody, easy to use, and UK manufactured.
Okay, so this is for hobbyists who might be doing some sort of electronics or circuitry with breadboards, and they know now how everything's going to go together, and they need an actual printed circuit board to make more permanent prototypes or to scale up to actual manufacturing, or is it all those things in between?
All those sort of things in between as well. It's making it easy to go to that next stage. So there's restrictions to what you can do with the breadboard stage. Removes the need for people to set up etching tanks in hack spaces that might not necessarily be suitable or they don't want to. Makes it fairly cheap and easy in order to kind of scale up to that next level. Mm-hmm. And then the way that we've set the service up means that you don't have to then go and find another manufacturer once you've done that prototyping stage. We can then take you all the way through into volume. And we offer lots of services as well to support people who are only just starting out in electronics, things like our sanity check. Mm-hmm. You can send us your files and we'll check them over, make sure you've made no manufacturing errors before you've even placed an order with us.
Right. So where do your customers come from? Are they generally sort of hack spaces and hobbyists, or is it more, you know, you come to events and exhibit and go to other industry events and you get people that way? Where do people find you?
A big mixture. We try to do as much as we possibly can to keep ourselves within the communities. So we visit maker fairs up and down the country, tech events. We do lots of networking at IoT conferences and wearables, things like OgCamp. But also we do a lot of commercial based things as well. So we work with lots of companies. We trawl Kickstarter for people that might need help moving to the next level. Okay. So we try to get our customers from as many places as possible.
Yeah.
And we just try to make ourselves as visual in the community so that people know who we are, feel comfortable to talk to us. Mm-hmm. and ask any questions they might have.
Cool. So you're wearing some badges with flashing LEDs on. Tell us about those.
The badges are something we've introduced recently. So we try to, as many events as we can, where we know there's going to be a desire for people to have a go at some soldering, and particularly with a lot of children, give them one-on-one tuitions about the best way to solder, give them really good techniques, and do them as a bit of a collector's item so you can pin them on your Ragworm lanyard and collect the set, hence why I am currently covered in flashing badges.
Okay. Now, I noticed that some of the PCBs you've got on display, you've got like loads of different colours and different shapes and designs. Is that something which you encourage people to do, or are these just things that people have sent you?
They're things that people have sent us, but it's something that we've really tried to pick up on and encourage people. So there's a lot of people, especially companies, say, for example, Pimeroni, Alex Eames at Raspberry Pi TV, with the kind of hacker community, the hobbyist community, the Raspberry Pi, the circuit boards become very visual and people have stopped putting it in enclosures, which for us is great.
Right,
so people are really getting that hardware experience.
So you want something which people will want to see out of the case.
So utilize your circuit board as artwork as well. Yeah. We've spent a lot of time with our solder mask manufacturers looking at different colours, making them really visual, interesting. So we're doing lots of purples. We've Pimeroni challenged us to make pink solder mask, not the most successful. We got somewhere close to it, but it actually doesn't exist.
So
it has to be 100% visual, so that there can't be any visual flaws, which is a real challenge for a manufacturer.
So what's complicated about colouring circuit boards?
There's a few challenges. It can, dependent on the colour that you're working towards, it can actually restrict your feature sizes. So you end up having to have thicker tracks. Your minimum hole size is affected.
Okay.
So there are things that you have to consider when you're going into it, mainly because the ink ends up thicker because you're mixing more pigments, more properties. But also different colours have different effects. So yellow, for example, is particularly hard to expose with an exposure machine when we're doing the artworks, because it naturally doesn't want to be exposed. So there are lots of challenges involved in it, and it's just having that discussion with the customer to get the best possible outcome. But it's not, you know, we can't be Dulux. We can't mix to a Pantone, because solder resist obviously has properties and functions that it has on the board more than just visual. So it's that meat of artistry versus technical specifications. Right. But yeah, we like to engage in those conversations with customers and be challenged and get better at different things, and it gives us a very unique selling point as a manufacturer, we think.
Cool. So if people want to find out more about Ragworm, other than coming to Ogcamp, how can they do it?
So we're very active on social media, particularly on our Twitter. So we're just quite simply at Ragworm.
Right.
We post blogs on our website, so you can trawl through what's called our rock pool and find out things that are going on at Ragworm, different machineries, different advances that we're making. And you can visit that website at www.ragworm.eu.
Excellent. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah. That was awesome. I had no idea that there was so much detail involved in the colour of the mask.
I know. I just thought, oh, you put a different colour ink on. What's wrong with that?
Yeah. I had a chat to them on the first day and I was absolutely stunned at the breadth of what they do. I had no concept whatsoever.
Yeah, and they've been coming to Ogcamp for years now. It's really great to see them coming back. They obviously get a lot out of it.
I was going to say, they've certainly expanded. I chatted to them. I went to the 2014 Ogcamp and I remember chatting to the Ragworm table quite a bit. And, they've certainly expanded their base quite a lot.
Excellent. So have we got any more interviews left, Mark? Or are those
those are all the ones that I managed to record.
Okay. And I know Martin dug up some videos of stuff for people who didn't come to Ogcamp.
Even if you did go to Ogcamp, or if you didn't, and if you want to get a flavour of what went on, we've got, this will all be linked in the show notes, we've got a video of Dan Lynch doing the introduction to this year's Ogcamp. There's a short video collage of photos that was put together by the Open Labs at Liverpool John Moores. There's the video of the Ogcamp podcasters panel that Mark was representing the Ubuntu podcast on. And then we've got a blog post from Dan Wood, and he was a first-time Ogcamper, and his blog is entitled What I Learned at Ogcamp 2015. So if you've never been before and want the perspective of somebody that's new to Ogcamp, you can find out from there. And then in researching this, I found a new podcast, the Tech Shed podcast, which is put together by Ollie Clark and John Archer. And they, in episode 4, and that's their fourth podcast that they've done so far, they have a retrospective on the Ogcamp that was actually recorded at Ogcamp. So, just a little bit of follow-on for those of you that want to find out more about Ogcamp and what goes on there.
Excellent. Nice one. Is that everything?
I believe so.
Cool.
Now it's time for Command Line Love. So, Robert submitted his command line love via our Telegram group. And those of you that have been paying close attention to Twitter will have seen that we have a Telegram group where you can chat to us and share your ideas. And you can find that by going to ubuntupodcast.org/Telegram. And if you're not already a Telegram user, you should be. And among other things, you can join our group and have a chat and share your command line loves, just like Robert did. And he says, I have a command line love for you. It uses the package discount or Python markdown and the terminal web browser links. I call it MDView and is a command line Markdown Previewer. It's very simple. And the command line is markdown $1, wrapped in quotes, which is the name of the file that you wish to view. And then you pipe that into links --stood in. And that will, the markdown command will render the markdown file as HTML and then pipe it into links. And then you can preview your markdown in the links browser. And this dovetails quite nicely with the pod publish that I've been working on, because our show notes are written in markdown. So you can actually use this to preview our show notes before we submit them for publishing. So maybe this could be integrated in some fashion.
So I guess this is meant to, given that it's using the whole $1 stuff, I guess this is
intended to
be used as a shell script.
Yes, or well, you can just type it in at the command line.
But you could just type it in and put the file name in
links right, --. Stood in. Yeah, yeah. Or you could make that a shell script.
Marvelous.
We love getting your feedback, so please send it to us. Even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh. If it's short, tweet us on @UbuntuPodcast. If it's less short, but please no essays, email us on show@ubuntupodcast.org. If you'd like to discuss some of the things we talk about with other listeners, post on our shiny new subreddit at reddit.com/r/UbuntuPodcast. Or you can just leave a comment on the relevant show notes on our website, ubuntupodcast.org.
And now it's time for your feedback. Andy Smith, of our glorious VPS benefactor Bitfolk, tweeted,
"Reached EP26 of Ubuntu Podcast, where most of the cast admit to never having watched The West Wing. Hope EP27 plus featured tales of them remedying this."
Sorry
about that.
I think he might be slightly disappointed to learn that. So Andy, if you get as far as episode 40, I'm really sorry, you'll discover that we still haven't watched it.
Yeah, I've never watched it either.
Maybe we'll have to watch it while we're in our inter-season break.
Nick will appear to fit in really well around here, because he hasn't watched it either.
Just don't tell Laura.
Yes. Lopter tweeted to @UbuntuPodcast.
Season 8, episode 30 was exactly the right length for me to shovel snow from the footpath. That's something I've never experienced, but that's great.
Do you just not get snow in the part of Australia where you're in?
You only get snow on mountaintops in Australia. It's very rare to get any real snow in our areas where people
actually live. And when it does, do you think the sky is falling?
Well, I've never actually seen snow aside from a mountaintop. At the moment, we've got the opposite. We've got total fire ban days around at the moment. We're fluctuating between really weird 17 degrees and 33 degrees next to each other. Mm-hmm. One day will be 17, one day will be 33, and then there'll be bushfires everywhere.
So we can be all, you know, cocky about the amount of snow we have here, but I was with a Siberian guy from Siberia once, and I said, "Oh, look, it's snowing here in the UK." And he looked out the window and he went, "That is not snow." And I was like, okay. Also on Twitter, Michael Shane
What
Brown
is the issue
asked,
with the network service on Ubuntu 15.10? Had to edit the network manager text file for the network.
What's going on, Alan?
Well, yes, indeed. That's a good question. I have no idea.
I tell you what.
Try askubuntu.com.
Michael, can you let us know what text file you had to edit and what the change was? That would be helpful.
I would imagine, just like plucking out of the air, I would imagine the file he edited was /etc/network/interfaces, and he plugged in all the details manually. Because if you do that,
gets
network
disabled.
Manager doesn't bother managing the interface. Yeah. So often when people have a problem with Network Manager, they resort to manually configuring the network in that text file. And that does work, but it means you can't then use Network Manager to like manage your network connection. But for some people, that's perfectly fine. If it's a desktop and it sits still on your LAN all the time, it doesn't really matter. So I would imagine that's what he did. I don't know why he did that. And I didn't know if it's a widespread problem on 15.10, but yes, ask Ubuntu or file a bug. The usual two responses to "my system is broken." Ask Ubuntu or file a bug. Anton Piatek said,
"Very interested in your review of the Steam controller. Thanks. Have been wondering about that and the Steam Link.
Are you still using it, Mark?
Yeah, well, the game I'm playing at the moment is Skyrim, which I have to play through Wine, which I can use the Steam controller to do. The trouble is there's a bug in Wine, which means you get stuck walking in one direction. So I'm currently using the Xbox controller, which is supported by the game natively. So when I'm playing other games that aren't Skyrim, then yes, I am still using it. Still never tried a Steam Link because I've not got a setup that requires it.
Super. Jarlath Reedy, sorry if I've butchered your name, pointed out...
Today I learned most FOSS users recommend DuckDuckGo, which includes Amazon results. Yet there was uproar when Ubuntu did this. Lee sigh. I suppose that, yeah, that's true, but I suppose the issue there is DuckDuckGo anonymizes all its results before it would go to Amazon, I would think. But yeah, it's...
Alan saying Ubuntu does the same thing.
Ah, do they?
I was going to say that.
How did I guess?
Yeah. But yeah, we've been
through this. The slight difference is that with DuckDuckGo, you're already searching the web, whereas with the Ubuntu Dash, you might be looking for a file on your machine,
yeah.
I suppose.
The best example I heard earlier was somebody who wanted to start Brazero to burn a CD and just had their search results filled with women's underwear.
With...
yeah. That needs to go away. Cohen Glosbach, who is Glosbach.
Did you know about Orphonic.com? Just discovered it. Might be handy for the occasional balancing leveling issues, though I'm not sure if web service goes against your open source standards.
Well, I'm glad Cohen appreciates our open source standards.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if this was meant to be helpful or if this was a gentle nudge in that our audio quality could be better.
Well, we have been advised to use Orphonic several times whenever we had a show that wasn't quite up to par. The trouble is,
really?
Well, one of the troubles is that you have to pay if you want to process the amount of audio that we do. Also, in the situations where we have had not up to scratch audio, or it's because of issues where Orphonic wouldn't be able to do anything with it, we do quite a lot of cleaning up and mastering in Audacity.
I love the way we're even like super PC about our own audio. Even when our own audio is terrible, we call it not up to par. Brilliant.
I could say other things, but this is a family friendly podcast. Say,
sounds like it was recorded in a bathroom.
Words are available for you to choose. We get that a lot. And that's all of your feedback. Thank you very much.
That's all for episode 40. We'll be back next week when we'll have more news, comment and discussion. Thanks very much, Nick, for joining us the last 2 weeks and filling in for Laura while she's been away.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been exciting, to be honest. As I mentioned pre-show, I've been listening to this podcast for good old 8 seasons now, so it's a little bit surreal to know that I'll be listening back and hearing my own voice.
Well, I've only been on it for about 5, so you've got some serious staying power.
It's not compulsory for you to listen back to the episodes you're in. I never do.
Oh no, I'm narcissistic, so I'll be there.
Okay, so I know you mentioned it last time, but for those who didn't hear, let everyone know where they can find the podcast that you're on.
So you can just go to systemau.net.au for the episodes. We are not safe for work, so don't play us in front of your kiddies.
Unless your kiddies like that kind of thing, in which case,
of course,
yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Awesome.
And I believe the next show will be the last one of the season.
Yeah.
Am I right?
The last two
of the season.
Yeah.
Ooh, awesome. Looking forward to that.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And stop recording.